The Athletic. Totally Football Show today. Why Liverpool could win the title, why Wolves could finish fourth, why Everton could go down, why Norwich could stay up, why Arsenal could score a goal. I'm sorry, what are we smoking? Why lots of other things too, as we examine the wealth of possibilities this latest round has left us. Stand by for another thrilling Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power. All right, listener, Monday, January 24th. And what an exciting Totally Football Show we have in store for you. Here with us today, we've got Daniel Story. All right, Daniel.
Morning, James.
Also, Sasha Gurionov. Hello to you, Sasha.
Morning, James.
And also, Natalie Gedra of ESPN Brazil.
Hello.
All right. They've all been busy, by the way, listener. If you're thinking, have they been at matches? They have. Dan has been at Leicester Brighton, and Natalie, you've been at Saint City and Palace Liverpool, and Sasha, you also went to Palace Liverpool, and you say Liverpool are going to win the league.
Apparently so. It only takes one draw for Man City, and then everyone's getting excited again. But I think this is the level, this is where we're at the moment, when City are winning all the games. Smallest right. Chink in the armour, you're trying to sort of hold on to it.
Well, you are, yeah. Is everyone else getting excited about Liverpool winning the league, Natalie?
I'm getting excited of having a title run, a proper title run. But the league, yeah, I don't know if I would go that far.
Okay, all right. Daniel, I think I know what your answer to all of this is.
Yeah, City will win the league.
There you go. The results, anyway. Ooh, Friday night, Norwich moved out of the bottom three with a 3-0 win at fellow strugglers Watford. That's Norwich's second straight victory and probably the second straight opposing manager they've got fired. Saturday, Newcastle also moving up to 18th with a 1-0 win at Leeds. At Goodison, Duncan Ferguson's new Everton reign got underway to a losing start. They got beaten 1-0 by Aston Villa. It was 1-0 for Man United at home to West Ham. A last-minute goal from Marcus Rashford. As Man United go top four, Wolves won 2-1 at Brentford. That's the Bees' fourth straight defeat. While Saints ended Man City's winning run at 12 games with a 1-1 draw at St Mary's that effectively leaves the title race wide open. Sash. Sunday, Liverpool won at Palace 3-1. Burnley emerged from hibernation to visit Arsenal for a 0-0 draw. That's now four straight games that the Gunners haven't scored in. It was 1-1 between Leicester and Brighton, and Chelsea again beat Spurs again. Without conceding, this time 2-0 at the Bridge. Of course, we'll be touching on all of those games in the course of the show, but let's begin with Sunday afternoon's clash at the Bridge.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show, sponsored by Paddy Power and part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
Ziyech onto the left foot, no surprise in that, and no surprise in that. He is the player with a wand of a left foot. Unsavable.
Goal of the weekend there, perhaps, at Hakim Ziyech. Hakim the Dream, as Julien would say. Notching up his third goal of the season. His third in the last seven games as well. And getting Chelsea on the way to a 2-0 win over Spurs. Crikey, what a goal that was.
Yeah, starting with Ziyech, he was a completely different player than a week ago against City when his decision-making was all wrong, bad finishing, everything was going bad for him. And against Spurs, he was everywhere. I remember when he first arrived and got a few very good performances, and Lampard was saying that he was different. He was just a different player and he does things differently. And I think that that's what he meant with this finish. And actually with his overall performance, at first I could see that he was like this unpredictable player, but he couldn't sustain this for a very long time. And against Spurs, that's what he showed. He was everywhere. He was brilliant.
Mm. Why has he suddenly come back to life, though?
Well, I think against Spurs, if you look at this particular game, Tuchel found him a position where he had lots of time and lots of space, because I think he basically had three or four shots where he was trying to find his range in the first half. And then eventually, you know, eventually he got it right. And I think this is where the tactics come in, because he had so much space there. Mount behind him had the space to run into. And also at the same time, Ziyech could drift and without actually harming the shape of Chelsea. So I think if anything, Spurs were very, very compliant in giving him the time to play well in this particular game, I think.
Lovely stuff. So Thomas Tuchel got that one right. Ziyech, who should have been at AFCON, really. Morocco busy there in the knockout stages against Malawi on Tuesday.
Yeah, and Ziyech not being part of Morocco's squad at AFCON was in the post. It wasn't a complete surprise. He hasn't played any of the World Cup qualifiers before after a bit of a row with Morocco coach, who accused him of turning up too late for a game and refusing to play as well, both of which Ziyech says is nonsense. But yeah, very much Chelsea's game, because a fortnight ago when I was at Manchester City, he looked really forlorn. He looked a little bit lost. And, you know, he isn't one of these Chelsea young kids. He's 28 now, and we need to see everything Ziyech has got from this point. But goals like that are his forte. And if they can get him the space to do that, then they're a far better team.
Mm. Thiago Silva with the other goal, Natalie. That's his third of the season. Two of them, intriguingly, have come against Spurs. And he's also now signed a contract extension, which is going to keep him at Stamford Bridge for another year, by which time he'll be, what, 38 years of age? What a remarkable physical specimen he is.
I can't stress enough that he's 37, because what he's been doing, okay, you can say that defenders these days, they have longer careers, they can play for longer. And I've spoken to defenders previous times, and they always joke around about that, saying, oh no, we're going to play until we're 40. But with Thiago, his physicality is amazing, and the way he manages his body and his training sessions and how much structure he has for himself in his home, how much respect he has for the game, you know, because he's been playing such a high level, and he was such a clever signing for Chelsea. I don't know how Leonardo at PSG can look at Chelsea matches and think, hey, so it was a good idea not to offer this guy a new contract, you know, because it just doesn't make any sense. And it's outstanding watching Thiago play at 37. It's so delightful.
But also with him, when you're behind the goal and you just watch him in front of you, sort of marshal of defence, it's remarkable how sort of calm, cool and composed he is. I mean, there is the occasional bad game, but like just overall, just this serene presence at the back. I think it's remarkable that at this age, with this experience, yet he still keeps up. Because, I mean, remember all those initial questions about whether he can keep up with the Premiership? Well, maybe 10 yards in your mind, basically.
Yeah, absolutely. When was it he made the move across? Was it the start of last season?
Yeah.
Okay, and at the time we all thought, well, I guess they could get a season out of him, but
because remember there was that West Brom game, the 3-0. I think he started that, and everyone was like, "Oh, look at him!" Well, look at him now.
Yeah, Chelsea's Ledley King, they call him. Magnificent. He also had a major part to play in Harry Kane not getting that goal. I don't know if you want to delve into. I know we're officially not for questioning refereeing decisions, so we can just move on. It wasn't given. Nothing to
if,
see.
If
here.
We are going to use our one free pass on a refereeing decision this weekend, I don't think that's it.
All right. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, that goal not standing means that Thomas Tuchel has faced Spurs five times as a Chelsea manager and has yet conceded a single goal to them. Sasha.
I was just going to mention the weirdly abysmal record that Spurs have against Chelsea over the last 30 years. Basically, if Chelsea are in any sort of bad form or anything, just play Spurs. Because I think, like, I went to see maybe a dozen of these games over the years. Maybe Spurs have won a couple of times. I remember there's a famous run where they come to win for 28 years or something like that. So, I don't know, maybe something happens to Spurs when they face Chelsea whereby they just completely collapse and are totally compliant.
Well.
But it keeps happening time after time.
Antonio Conte says it's because there's a gulfing class between his team and the opponents. Natalie.
I don't buy that, honestly. I think when you have a team that is run by Conte, you expect more in terms of energy and in terms of attitude. They, of course, there is a gap in quality, in depth squad between Chelsea and Spurs, and we cannot deny that. But there is also this gap between Spurs and Liverpool, and they were very competitive against Liverpool in that amazing 2-2 draw that they got last December. So I understand what where he comes from. And I remember after the first match from the Carabao Cup, he was just telling, oh, this match shows the size of the gap between Spurs and Chelsea. It's going to take time. And I know it's going to take time with Spurs. But I think things can be different and they can be very competitive. They can have a different attitude. And it shouldn't be so straightforward. Okay, you have a lot of players and you're going to play better. And we're going to play you four times and we're going to lose all of them and we're not even going to score. It shouldn't be so straightforward, especially when you have a manager as high quality as Antonio Conte is.
All right. I mean, this wouldn't be him kind of positioning things for a last-minute push in the transfer window.
It could be. We don't know exactly how the transfer window is going to go for Spurs. He makes it clear without making it clear that he wants more players. And we know that he's not the best in PR with in relationships with big investors or big people inside the club like he showed at Chelsea and in all the clubs he previously worked at, but I don't think it's just down to that, you know. I don't like the explanations. I usually enjoy listening to Conte, but I don't buy that.
The interesting thing, I thought he got his selection wrong yesterday and he didn't make substitutes quick enough. He picked Matt Doherty and Ryan Sessegnon as the two wingbacks. And we all know both if Tottenham are going to be successful, then those wingbacks have to push forward and have to cross and create chances. And we know that that's how you trouble Chelsea as well, or can trouble Chelsea. And neither of them attempted a cross. Neither of them created a chance. Neither of them had a shot on target. And yet, he left Sergio Reguilón and Emerson Royale on the bench for the whole game. That seemed very odd to me that he didn't try and shift the pattern. It seemed prime for an Antonio Conte kind of double half-time switch where he says, this completely isn't working. I'm tearing it up. We're changing things. It just seemed a bit submissive, as if the game was already lost at half-time.
Resigned to their fate. They slipped to seventh place, Spurs. Man United have moved into the top four again with their 1-0 win at West Ham. That was Saturday, 3 o'clock. The goal in this match coming with the last kick of the game, courtesy of Marcus Rashford, who does this a lot. Producer Charlie pointing out that no player in Premier League history has scored more last-minute winners than Rashford. Crikey.
And on a very personal level, it's really nice to see him being cheered by Manchester United fans and people in general. There's been this sort of bizarre take over the last couple of months that he needs to kind of concentrate on his football, in inverted commas, which Ole Gunnar Solskjaer actually kind of started. And as if you can't campaign for social justice and play football at the same time, which is a nonsense. And he clearly is struggling for confidence. I think he's struggled, and the fact that he was carrying an injury for basically 6 months without it receiving any long-term treatment. He played under one manager who was kind of all vibes, no system, and then he's now under a manager who's all system, no vibes, and that's quite hard for a young player to deal with. And we also have to remember, Marcus Rashford's whole career is kind of by accident, in that he came into Manchester United's team through an injury crisis and stayed there. And it's quite hard to learn on the job at a club like Manchester United, who are not particularly well run at the moment. So, yeah, just absolutely delighted for him on a personal level.
Yeah, he really needed a goal like this. And he needed, more than the goal, he needed to show that energy and that pace, because there was a lot of talk about his body language on the pitch. And he's not so young anymore, you know. He is very talented. He knows the club very well. So it's really nice to see him stepping up in a moment like this, where United really, he came for the rescue, basically, from a match that honestly had a brilliant finish, but it wasn't a great match. You know, you didn't have that many clear-cut chances in the game. United had like 3 shots on target. West Ham had 1. Yeah, it wasn't brilliant. But the point is, we've seen Man United have big wins at the end of matches during this season. It's not the first time that it happens. And they didn't manage to turn this into a momentum. So this weekend, they saw the competition for the top four all lose points. Spurs lost points, West Ham lost points, Arsenal lost points. And they also saw how much of a difference it makes to have depth in squad, especially with Spurs. So now that Man United, okay, we have all these teams with matches, with games in hand, but now Man United really need to show that they have the players and they have the depth in squad and they have the quality to maintain, to sustain this momentum and to keep this fourth spot, because it just makes sense.
I think systemically, and when you look at United play, you kind of look at it thinking, well, what is this momentum going to come from? Because Natalie and I were at Brentford Man United on Wednesday. And certainly of the two sides, Brentford were much more interesting to watch in terms of what they did tactically, how they approached the first half. If anything, United won that game through a moment of class, and then they become a team that hits their opposition on the counter, which is exactly how Rashford actually scored against Brentford as well. So they, at the moment, like it is hard to see where this would come from. And also, I mean, listening to Rangnick after games, and you know him having to manage Ronaldo and you know substituting Ronaldo, feels like maybe there is the focus maybe isn't quite there. Maybe the focus is one manager is trying to install some sort of a system, but not necessarily, maybe it's not necessarily cutting through to everybody.
Well, it is only a brief time that he's been there, and he is coming midway through the season and picking up a club in some disarray. So, I mean, in some ways, it's
and
not
to
bad.
Be fair, he's one, picking up points. He is picking
he's
up
picking
points.
Up points. One defeat in 13. They've gone top four. Daniel, did you want to add?
Well, I was just going to say, I mean, I'm aware that we're creating a Declan Rice section in this podcast every Monday at the moment, but another absolute superstar display from him. Against Leeds, we saw him, you know, both times his team struggling and players around him struggling, but against Leeds, we saw him kind of trying to carry the ball forward and be progressive and create attacking moves. And against United, it was pure defensive work in protecting that defence and shackling Bruno Fernandes. And the guy can do both and can do both within the space of a week and can lead his club. And it's, you know, we said about Thiago Silva, it's hard to believe he's 37 with the way he plays. Well, exactly the same with Declan Rice. You know, this kid's only 23 years old, only turned 23 last week. He is a phenomenal central midfielder. And if Manchester United don't look at a performance like that and think that is exactly what we need, then they're more fools than we thought.
I was shocked the first time I interviewed Declan Rice. Because I was like, this guy can't be 22 or 21 at the time. And he has such a strong presence on the pitch. He has everything that you want from a player. He's young, he's talented, he's got personality. When you talk to him, he sees the match perfectly. And he's so clever. So, yeah, I'm down for that session, Declan Rice weekly session.
Declan Rice is just 23, looks about 10 years older. Curious, because his direct predecessor at West Ham had exactly the inverse thing. Always looked like he was about 45 and was actually much younger. Well, this game continuing. David Moyes' remarkable record of never winning a Premier League match as a visiting manager with any side at Man United or at Arsenal or at Chelsea or at Liverpool. That's in almost two decades of management. Crikey. Anyway, Arsenal, I know you're excited, listener, to get onto them. They are 2 points behind Man United with a game in hand. But this weekend, coming off a goalless draw against the bottom side in the Premier League, Burnley. How bad is Arsenal's goal-scoring drought? Put it this way, Burnley have played a league game since the Gunners last found the net in any competition. Burnley, who featured on January the 2nd, and Arsenal, who haven't scored since the Man City game on New Year's Day. In fact, again, producer Charlie points out, they have more red cards than goals in January. Crikey.
Yeah, you see the plays and you see the runs that Arsenal's making. They're doing things right. And they created a lot of chances against Burnley. It was like, it was 20 shots. They had 20 shots and no goal against Burnley. We've spoken about it. They are a young team who are going to make mistakes. You know, they will deliver amazing, unexpected performances like against Man City, and they will have 20 shots and no goal like against Burnley. So to be fair, Nick Pope was really good. If you think about the goal scoring aspect of the match, that was supposed to be the moment when you have a goal scorer experience stepping up. That was That's why they gave Aubameyang that new contract. Arteta said that they were a bit slow and lagging the first half, and they came back much better on the second half. And there's the other side of things, because you need that aggressiveness and that edge that a young team will show. So that's definitely a point. It's the positive of having a young team. You need this aggressiveness, you need this attitude, and this is what they're down for. But you're also going to get matches like that where you just need an experienced goal scorer.
That leggy thing, maybe there is some kind of legs to that argument, because they had, of course, featured on Thursday in the League Cup semi-final, whereas Burnley hadn't played in any game for absolutely ages. Oh, a point for battling Burnley, who have a tremendous record, curiously, against London sides. Their last four matches against teams from the capital, this 0-0 at Arsenal, a 0-0 against West Ham, a 3-3 with Palace, and a 1-1 at Stamford Bridge, a third of all their points this season coming in those games. Curious. What does it mean? I don't know. Arsenal 2 points behind Man United with a game in hand. They have the easiest calendar, perhaps, because they're not in any cups, are they?
Yeah, but they also have... They're going to struggle with postponements, because I looked at it today. They have three games against the so-called Big Six to be rearranged. Liverpool, Chelsea and Spurs, for different reasons. And they're going to need to fit that somewhere in the calendar. And, you know, if we see them at the moment playing sort of Thursday, Sunday, or, you know, twice a week. And I think they are beginning to look a little bit jaded. And certainly on Thursday, I can guess Liverpool, their legs went a little bit. And if you look further on into the season, trying to fit all these extra matches, I wonder how it's going to play out for them.
Who have you got top four then? Who do you think is going to take four, Sash?
The way it's looking, I think probably United are going to grind it out.
Oh, yeah?
I think, yeah.
Daniel?
Yeah, same. Not through necessarily any vast rise in class on their part between now and May, I don't think. I just think that the squad depth means they'll just, sort of, as Sash has, kind of grind and get it done.
Right. What do you think, Natalie?
Yeah, no, I'm absolutely Man United. And it's because of this squad depth, because it just gets to the point in the season that it really... really does make a difference. It didn't make that much of a difference in December. That's when the fixtures are all congested. But I think Man United, definitely.
Nobody fancy Wolves? 4 points off the top four, but with a game in hand on United. 4 wins in a row in all competitions. 2-1 winners at the Brentford Community Stadium on Saturday.
I mean, I don't fancy them for top four, but Bruno Lage is having one of the best managerial debut seasons I can remember in the Premier League. Because to remember where Wolves were at the end of last season, it didn't just feel that Nuno had kind of grown a little bit weary, or Wolves had grown a little bit weary of him, but that the whole project was kind of slightly just sort of coasting along, maybe, and getting a little bit slack. And he has turned them into this efficient powerhouse of a team. You know, since they lost at home to Brentford on September the 18th, and since then, I think only Liverpool, Man City, Chelsea and Man United have taken more points. Only four teams have taken more points than them anyway. So they are legitimately in that race. They've got four really big games coming up. They've got Spurs, yeah, Arsenal, Leicester and West Ham, their next four, which Lars will see as a chance to show that they do belong in that conversation.
Absolutely. This game here, the 2-1 victory at Brentford, a game that lasted 2 hours and 24 minutes, thanks to a series of interruptions, including head injuries, technical issues with the referee's equipment, and a drone flying over the Brentford Community Stadium. Game also featured a pretty special goal from Ivan Toney. Woof.
Martinez was decent as well.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, lovely team moves, but the touch from Toney, a player who presumably is a bit low on confidence after not really lighting things up in the Premier League.
Well, he bundled one in against United, which Thomas Frank was talking after the game, saying, you know, I could see his performances again improving over the last couple of games. So this one, to take that on the volley was pretty cool, and also the stage of the game. But also you have to point out, I think that was Brentford's only shot on target, so they're getting a little bit limited in how much they can do. But they're up against the team. I think. It was interesting to see at the end of that match how sort of Brentford have collectively lost their minds at the final whistle, being frustrated, I think, by everything, all the delays. Plus, one thing with Bruno Lage and Wolves, they're horrible to play against. I mean, it's like, you look, tactically, the defensive record is superb, but they're all I don't want to use the word because they're all shit on the pitch. And I mean, you try to play against Neves and Moutinho, and I think they're the types of players that get into your head, get into Thomas Frank's head, a few words here and there. So I think they're great at disrupting. They're also very good themselves, and they just again against Brentford, they had two shots on target. They had the third goal narrowly chucked off as well. But they're just efficient and they're frightening. And again, against the big side, say Liverpool, took them all the way down to the wire. And you have to wonder maybe if they can push for that fourth place, because they're just such an awkward proposition for anyone who faces them.
Yeah, Wolves are sh**, but in a nice way. And that's what Spurs, Arsenal, Leicester and West Ham will be facing next. Win those games and we'll have to talk again about this. Natalie.
Yeah, and Daniel mentioned the Wolves project. And I think actually now, with Bruno Lage, the Wolves project took a different step, because you look at them and they seem a more balanced team. And they have the second best defensive record in the league. And they still produce very high quality goals, like both goals, actually. The first two goals against Brentford, they were really nice. So we are seeing this Wolves going a step further. And yeah, the emotions were running high. With Thomas Frank, I think that the emotions are always running high, you know, when you watch a match with him on the touchline, it's almost distracting. You don't know which way to look, and he was sent off after final whistle. I'm all for managers with high emotions. So not being sent off, but yeah.
Frank by name, Frank by nature.
I was going to say, it was quite funny watching him again after the Brentford United game. I know you guys thought he was angry. I didn't think he was that angry. I think he was just basically, he was kind of bigging himself up. But at the same time, as he was walking off to talk to yet another broadcaster, he kind of muttered, "Oh, I hate football." I think he's just getting a little bit frustrated, because Brentford, they are good in spells again, but there is certain limitations you can see there that hopefully maybe he thinks that Eriks might be able to solve. From what I see from Jay Harris reporting, it seems like they might have agreed terms with Eriksen, but they need to check his health, I think, before they take him on.
Well, of course. Four defeats in a row now for Brentford, but they are 8 points clear of the bottom three. We'll be talking about what's going on down there next.
Hi, listeners, it's me again. And it's chilly enough out there. I must admit, I'm slightly jealous of the Newcastle players jetting off for a week-long warm-weather training camp in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia. More bodies are expected to be added by the end of the month, and spirits will be high after the win at Elland Road last weekend at the Magpies. They are 11-8 to be relegated, and now 8-15, odds on, to survive. The likes of Todd Cantwell, James Tarkowski, Diego Carlos, Aaron Ramsey, Dele Alli, and Jesse Lingard are just some of the names who have all been linked with a move to the northeast this month. Eddie Howe's men lie 18th, a point behind Norwich with a game in hand. They face fellow strugglers Everton next, and after Raf Benitez left the place in a bit of a mess, the Toffees may be drawn into the dogfight themselves unless they can stop the rot quickly. Currently, Everton are only 4 points from the dreaded drop zone, and if you think that they may go down, they're an interesting price at 9-2. I'm sure Duncan Ferguson delivered some stinging home truths in the dressing room after Saturday's defeat to Aston Villa. Hashtag Big Scary Scott. With Norwich having to play Man City, Liverpool and Chelsea in their next 7 league games, it's no surprise the Paddy Power trainers reckon they're bunched and have them as short as 8-1 on to go down. Watford look deemed to follow suit and are priced at 3-10 accordingly, whilst Burnley at the minute look more stretched out than the mother's washing line, and although Sean Dyche did mastermind a point at Arsenal on Sunday, they're still 4-7 for the drop. You can find out these odds and more at paddypower.com or indeed the Paddy Power app. Prices are accurate at the time of recording. It's over 18s. T's and C's apply. BeGambleAware.org. And remember, take time to think.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. The Athletic is the only place you can read articles by Daniel Taylor, Amy Lawrence, Phil Hay, James Pearce, Ollie Kay, and the very best football writers around.
Set piece from Aston Villa, super delivery from Luca Dean, and the perfect header from Wendia right on the stroke of half time. Everton 0, Aston Villa 1.
Oof, relegation, everybody. And I'm going to throw Everton's Aston Villa defeat into this mix, because they're only 4 points clear of the drop now, the Toffees. Anyway, this was Duncan Ferguson's first game back in charge. And it saw Villa 1-0 winners, a goal from Emi Buendia, set up, of course, by the man that Rafa Benitez sold, Nach, Luca Dean. Crikey.
Yeah, I mean, Everton had kind of played the hits last week with Mashiri doing his open letter and Duncan Ferguson buying drinks for fans and presumably this sort of rallying cry in the dressing room before the game. The reality is you can try as hard as you want, but if you've got a painful lack of creativity because your manager sold your most creative fullback and you don't really have any, weirdly have any creative centre midfielders. Andros Townsend and Damara Gray are brilliant or can be brilliant, but they're not really creative wingers. They're strange. They're sort of goal-scoring wingers more than creative wingers. And, I mean, put it this way, Everton were missing their second-highest assist maker on Saturday. And the problem with that is that that's Michael Keane, who's a central defender. They really, really need some creativity. We were just talking about Eriksen. I'm quite surprised that... I know there's a Thomas Frank connection for him, but I'm quite surprised that Everton have not tried to bring in a creative player because that's going to put them in real trouble.
That big dunk buying everyone a drink, how did that work exactly? He put money behind the bar at how many pubs around Goodison?
Various pubs around the ground. And, you know, at every football ground, there are designated home pubs where fans collect a drink. It's not that difficult to do. It's a lovely gesture. It does just feel a little bit kind of 2 + 2 = 4 stuff. Like, we'll get the fans together. Right. And I don't know if it had any negative
effect. Suggest that lashed up fans threw that Lucas.
Well, it's not a great...
He didn't get them Lucas, did he?
No.
Well, Matty Cash and Luca Dean both hit by the same plastic bottle as they celebrated Buendia's goal. And a fan has been arrested based on CCTV footage. Plenty of bottles were thrown, actually, during those celebrations. Really horrible scenes. No shots from Everton in the first half. They did get better in the second half, though. Was that because of this Anthony Gordon fellow?
Yeah, he's a ray of light at the moment in that he's young and he looks as if, you know, he's a homegrown player and he looks as if he really does want it. But more importantly than that, he wants it, but also with some composure. It's not just a case of passion and guts and glory. And that's not enough in the Premier League. Smarter teams than you will be able to deal with that. Gordon has talent as well. He is a creator, but he's kind of having to do everything himself at the moment. They need to get Dominic Calvert-Lewin back in, you know, kind of match fitness and match form, because they can go down if they don't.
He certainly can. A good win for Villa. The mood bitter at Goodison Park after the final whistle, with fans staying behind to protest. Lots of bed sheets. Also a plane flying overhead, urging Bill Kenwright to do one. Sasha.
You know what? I had a look and there was a plane flying overhead at St Mary's on the 15th of August 2015. Kenwright and co, time to go. Oh. So it's been a theme for quite some time, and I was wondering actually who the Everton fans are going to turn on after Benitez, because I think he was a fig leaf, I think, at that stage for the guys running the club. And I think I have to agree with them that it's Kenwright, because Kenwright is the constant that's been there for over two decades of winning nothing and achieving very little. And it was, I think, there was something very indicative about his little chat with the fans after the game, where A, he's unconvincing, and then B, he says something about, you've had good times. And it was almost like a cry for help in return. No, we haven't. Like, what are you talking about? You might have had good times, but we haven't. I think it's getting to a stage with Everton now. It's just like, somebody do something, because this is utterly, utterly miserable experience trying to support this club.
Mm. Any further word on who their long-term choice is going to be?
There's talk this morning that they are speaking to Vitor Pereira, the former Fenerbahce and Porto, is that right? I think.
Yeah.
Coach. Again, there was talk of, they spoke to him in 2013 and in 2019. So we said it last week, but it does feel like they have a list of 10 managerial names and they've sort of forgotten that there's another world out there. But I think he would. I mean, everything's a gamble now, but the Wayne Rooney stuff, I think that's a huge, huge gamble. Frank Lampard, pretty much the same. And then last week there was talk of Fabio Cannavaro. It's like, I don't know. He's sort of reminds me of sort of like the candidate number three on blind date, Fabio Cannavaro, in that list. A sort of wacky choice from left field who, it's just such a strange way that that club's operating.
But you can at least see a kind of common managerial philosophy behind... Oh, no, hang on, you can't. All right.
They are all former players, well done.
There you go. Toffees just 4 points above the bottom three. Only one win in 14 league matches now. The worrying thing as well is that the teams below them, there are four of them, and by and large, the exception of Watford, picking up some form. Norwich and Newcastle both winning away this weekend, and Burnley with a point at least at Arsenal. Let's talk a little bit about the Norwich and Newcastle games. First of all, 3-0 Norwich at Watford. A shout out to Nathan Atkinson, who tweeted this summary of the match. Josh Sargent, Pepper's Lowly Hearts Club, brackets Dennis Band. I mean, it, nice. It works better in print, but just massive hats off to Nathan for that. Crikey. Sargent then, two goals here. His first in the Premier League. What about the first then?
Well, what a finish from the first goal. A feel-good story of the weekend, because he's only 21. He looks like such a nice kid. And him waving to the fans during the interview that were chanting his name and chanting USA, it was a really nice moment. Norwich is out of the relegation zone for the first time, but they have only one game in hand. So we have to put this into context this season, because Norwich has 22 matches played. Newcastle has 21. Watford has 20. And Burnley 18. So it is a relief for the Norwich fan to look at the table and see themselves out of the relegation zone, but we don't know the real impact that is going to have in the relegation, in the fight against the relegation, actually.
All right. Well, it is their biggest win away in the Premier League since September 1993. Good Lord, that was a 5-1 at Everton.
I mean, this is probably the end of Claudio Ranieri's time in charge. And I feel like maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago I said he's almost lasted as long as Kike Sanchez Flores. And to be fair, he's lasted longer than Kike Sanchez Flores. But this
Who
is
hasn't?
Now it. Yeah, it's true, true. They've looked wretched under Ranieri. They had two purple patches where they scored, I think, four goals in sort of 12 or 13 minutes against Everton and scored two in a minute against Manchester United. And other than that, they've been defensively way too open. You can't take Leicester's title win away from Ranieri, and no one would ever try. But quite what Watford thought they were getting, having seen Ranieri at Fulham, is unclear, because they look exactly the same as that Fulham team. I think that Fulham team had a little bit more quality. And the argument in Ranieri's defence from Watford fans has been that this isn't a very good squad. It's a squad that isn't good enough to stay up. But they might as well take a gamble and try, because they're not going to stay up under Ranieri.
And after the match, Ranieri said something that I thought it was just, I don't know, just a bit, I don't know if it's weird, the word. I believe in the players who want to believe. Who doesn't want to believe can just go home. So yeah, there's something going on there in terms of spirit. He's not happy with the players. Something is up there. He wouldn't just throw that on post match. Just if you don't want to believe, just go home. It's just, don't know if it's weird, the case, but he's trying to make a point clearly.
All right. Well, any kind of point would be good for Watford, who are having some trouble doing that at the moment. Sasha?
I think a big factor for Watford as well is the fact that Ben Foster's been out injured, and then he came back and then he picked up COVID, missing this game. And I think with the shambles that they had at the back, someone like Foster would have been quite important to have him there. And so it looks like just everything is going against them at the moment.
All right. Meanwhile, Newcastle, how about their 1-0 win away at Elland Road? Daniel, you were saying in your always excellent The Score column Monday morning, exactly the type of result, 1-0 away, that we wondered whether Eddie Howe could specialise in.
Yeah, because they were under the cosh for long periods. Leeds should have won the game, and I think probably would if Patrick Bamford had been fit. But this is not the Newcastle certainly not the Eddie Howe Newcastle we think of. And it does matter, because they aren't going to stay with the time they've got left in the transfer window. They aren't going to buy enough players to stay up by entertaining. I think the notion when the takeover happened before the January transfer window was that Newcastle might be able to kind of spend their way to goals and get out of trouble that way. That isn't going to be the case. They're not going to be able to do that. The players they're looking at are central defenders and central midfielders, and that's what they need to stay up. And yeah, you know, a huge, huge away win in adversity and against the run of play.
Mm. Newcastle move up to 18th. The goal from Jonjo Shelvey, whose free kick found its way under Ilan Meslier. All right. Much more to come on the Premier League weekend, including Man City's winning run coming to an end in front of Natalie Jedra. That's up next.
We all enjoy the sport we call the beautiful game.
But since I've retired, I've discovered an ugly, even darker side to the sport we love.
Join me as Jamie Redknapp investigates.
Thanks, Jamie. We'll take it from here. Join Jamie Redknapp for Jamie Investigates, the football mockumentary series, available to watch on Paddy Power's Twitter. This week, Jamie investigates half and half scarves.
Do you know the truth?
Paddy Power.
18+, begambleaware.org.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Smart Speaker, and now ad-free on The Athletic, this is The Totally Football Show with James Richardson.
Totally Football Show European Edition is out first thing Tuesday with all the usual European excitements, plus De Topper. That's right, PSV Ajax, which was played on Sunday. We'll find out what happened there. Ajax, who staggeringly weren't top of the Eredivisie before that game. Are they now? Find out in Tuesday's show, or just look on the internet, of course. The Athletic Women's Football Podcast is out on Tuesday as well, with Arsenal, Man City and other things too. Totally Football League Show is out now and will feature thoughts on Forest beating Derby 2-1 at the City Ground this weekend. Crikey, Daniel, that was a bit of a big result for you.
Yes, my favourite stat of the weekend is that the only Derby managers to have won away at Nottingham Forest since 1925 were either Brian Clough or Nigel Clough.
That's remarkable.
Yes, I mean, a great performance from Forest. They are a completely different team under Steve Cooper. When Chris Hughton was sacked, Forest had 1 point from 7 games. Since then, their form puts them in the top two in the division. And I suspect come the end of the season, they'll regret not making that change in the summer, because Cooper has been a breath of fresh air. A lot depends, I think, on whether they can keep hold of Brennan Johnson in the next week. He scored the second goal, and we know that Burnley are interested, and the fee is kind of rumoured around the £16 to £18 million mark, which is a lot of money for a championship club to turn down. So, but if he stays, then the sky really is the limit. I think most championship clubs are now playing for second place. I think Fulham will win the league. But other than that, there's no real reason to be scared, I don't think. There's just so much competition for places for those playoff spots with Bournemouth and QPR, and Coventry have dropped a bit. But yeah, I think Forest will be there or thereabouts come May.
Derby, of course, have been on this remarkable run of form under Wayne Rooney. But all this against the backdrop of the continuing uncertainty about their future. Where are we now in terms of how many days they've got left to get backers in?
Yeah, so by the beginning of February, they need to provide the EFL, or the EFL says that they need to provide them with proof, definitive proof that they've got funds for the rest of the season. As of late last week, a story emerged that there is now not yet a preferred bidder, but there is a definitive offer on the table, which takes into account the claims from Middlesbrough and Wickham, which is one of the key things in all this. That is a hugely positive step for Derby, because if that deal can go through, then they will be able to name a preferred bidder and therefore provide proof of funds from February onwards, which, you know, I'm minded to think that they can't go out of business just because it seems unthinkable. But if that bid falls through, then there is a serious possibility that could happen.
Crikey. 2 years ago, they were one game away from the Premier League. And now they're only about, what, a week away from total calamity. Crikey. Mm. Saints against Man City, 1-1. This was Saturday, tea time. And Natalie, you were there. Do you want to give Saints some wild appreciation?
Absolutely. We have to give credit to Southampton because they were very resilient in the way they defended. And Salisu, he was absolutely brilliant. The fans were chanting his name in the final minutes. Well, the defensive performance as a whole was very, very good. And they were counter-attacking really well. It was a brave performance. After the match, I was speaking to Lianco, a Brazilian defender who moved to Southampton just now at the start of the season. And he said that the level of information and detail that Ralph Hasenhüttl gives to the players is like second to none. He's really intense and hardworking, and you can see this playing out for Southampton. So you have to give them credit. But, well, Sterling missed a big chance in the first half. Things weren't happening up front. Jack Grealish wasn't happening. Phil Foden was trying but not quite getting there, and Pep was very unhappy on the sideline during the first half, and it wasn't because of the goal, because there are many times that when City is losing and he's not upset because he can see that they're following a game plan, that things are happening. So on second half there was a big improvement from Man City, but then it was just very good defending from Southampton.
I'm confused because Pep said that this was outstanding. In fact, probably one of their most outstanding performances of the season.
Yeah.
By far.
By far, yes. Well, I'm sure second half he was very pleased with the performance because it really improved for Man City. And he was all fired up in the touchline. Just to give an example, the fall from Armstrong on Laporte on the second half that they were checking for a red card. Pep was so involved and fired up that he was just screaming. It was on the other side of the pitch, to be fair with Pep, but he was just screaming for Laporte, "Get up, get up!" And Laporte was like, "No, it was a bad injury." And he just didn't care. He just wanted to play the game and get the 3 points. Anyway, he was pretty upset.
All right. Also fired up after the game was Jack Grealish, who apparently was waiting in the tunnel for Oriol Romeo, which is a bold move. I think probably on a list of players I would wait in a tunnel for after a game.
It's one of those where you need to take a teammate and tell him to stand right in front of you and you can say, "Hold me back, hold me back."
Yeah. Mohamed Salisu, though, most interceptions, the most clearances, most duels won, most touches of any Southampton player. Also to that shot to the face, saving a potential City goal. Apart from that, what was so special about him?
He just looks like a in inverted commas, proper defender now. He struggled to settle a bit when he came to England. I think he only played 8 league games last season for Southampton. But with Vestergaard leaving, they needed a big central defender who is both confident with the ball at his feet, which Salisu is, but mainly just loves defending. And I think, you know, I'm struggling to think of many Premier League players that have improved more from last season to this. This is the player that Southampton bought, they were buying. And he's another one who, as you know, to go back to the start of the show, as with Hakim Ziyech, they're lucky that he's not at AFCON because he's Ghanaian, but he doesn't have a Ghana cap. And there was some discussion a couple of years ago where Ghana kind of accused him of not wanting to play, and his family released a statement saying that was rubbish. And then he came out and said, "Well, if this is how it's going to be, I'd rather concentrate on my club career." And you know, to Southampton's massive advantage over the last couple of weeks.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show, in association with Paddy Power. And with Paddy Power, if something doesn't go quite to plan, you can get your money back as a free bet if one leg of your bet builder lets you down. Which is good news for Watford fans as they get ready to appoint their third manager of the season. Pre-match bet builders only get your stake back as a free bet. Minimum 4 plus legs. Maximum free bet is £10. Other T's and C's apply. And please gamble responsibly.
2 points dropped. 9 to go, Sasha. As Liverpool close in. No wonder Pep spooked. Liverpool with a game in hand.
They have, both teams have a decent run of fixtures in February. But City have to face Spurs. Which, again, what Spurs is going to turn up, how are they going to manage this is a question. But perhaps this is the one game that, you know, the rest of the league, stroke Liverpool fans, will be looking at thinking, maybe they can...
I wasn't expecting that. I thought you might mention the derby or when they face each other, Liverpool and Man City, at the Etihad but Spurs...
We have to build towards that, because I think when Liverpool go to City, they have to be within probably 5 points for it to make sense. They're going to have to win that game. I think that's absolutely clear. But for that potential win to mean anything, they have to be within that striking distance of 2 wins of City. I still think it's definitely a very long shot. But again, I think this is the type of league where, depending on the level of your team, yes, City can win 12, but they cannot win maybe 22. Maybe they can at some point. It's like with West Ham, they can win 3 or 4, but they cannot win 6 or 7 because, you know, laws of averages, other teams have high quality. So, you know, you cannot expect these runs to go on forever. Liverpool have come out of a very tricky patch at the moment. They won a couple of games, they've done quite well. But then now they have a run of fixtures where they can build up ahead of steam. And this is actually what City do so well. City had a run of fixtures where they didn't play any of the big six, I think for about 9 games or something like that, and they won them all. This is what Chelsea had, and they kind of dropped loads of points there in a similar situation. Now the City have maybe dropped one game. Liverpool now have to start winning. If they don't, well, there's nothing to this, because I don't think City will drop more than maybe 10 points before the end of the season at best.
Liverpool, I personally think you're mad, suggesting they have a chance of winning this title, but weirder things have happened. And it is true that Liverpool have just had what should be their last league game without Salah and Mane. And that was the period in which supposedly everything, you know, the wheels were going to come off. Instead, they won, well, I think they won all 3 games, didn't they, without their two African stars?
Well, they won all three ties. Hmm.
In the Premier League, yes.
Right.
Yeah. In the Carabao Cup, they picked up a draw with...
A 0-0 draw and then went through in the second leg. Yeah, that was Thursday night, as we mentioned. The game this weekend was at Crystal Palace, and both Sasha and Natalie were there. Liverpool looked hungry, Natalie, but not as hungry as you were.
That's virtually impossible, because I'm always hungry.
We talk a lot about some London stadia and their catering arrangements, Chelsea in particular. What's the deal at Selhurst Park?
No, the problem is now with COVID restrictions, for you to move around places in Selhurst Park is more complicated. So after I did my live heat, I couldn't get to the media room. Like, literally, I couldn't get because of the logistics that involved. So I basically didn't have lunch, which, yeah, for me was a tragedy. But I think Patrick Vieira had bigger issues on his mind, yeah.
Superb segue, Natalie. Beautiful.
I have to say, after the match, I managed to make myself to the media centre. It looked like not many people went there. And there I found just mountain of pies. And I stuffed my face before I cycled home.
Is that true, Sasha?
This is absolutely true. I had 4 pies.
Oh, look
damn
at that.
All right. How big a pie are we talking?
Well, just your standard pies, but they were hot.
Well, I know. There's a lot of different... Are you talking about little kind of... Little hold pie. It in your hand, Melton Mowbray pork pie? Or, yeah.
Yeah, those little pies. But
essentially, single servings, and you wolfed down 4 of them, and then got on your bike and cycled back to... Shay Gurionov, remarkable. Anyway, you went home happy. So did Liverpool, hashtag segue, after their 10th league win in a row against Palace. I read that Alisson was man of the match here, though, after a stirring second half from the hosts. What do you think, Natalie?
Well, two moments very different in the match. You have Liverpool completely dominant for 35, 40 minutes, and then everything starts working well for Palace. They're pressing, they're creating good chances. They're making Trent's and Robertson's life very, very hard in the flanks. So Schlupp played a really, really good match. Olise was very good. He was dangerous. And it's another good performance from Palace that it's not rewarded with points or point in this case. But they're a very interesting team to watch. And after the match, Klopp mentioned a little that it was an intense week for Liverpool, of course, because they played Thursday. But Fabinho, I spoke with Fabinho, and he was a bit harsher, saying that they really need to solve this difference between one of the best performances of the season for like 35, 40 minutes, and then this big drop. So he was like, this is a problem. This cannot happen. Because the fact is, Alisson was outstanding again.
But this is interesting, Natalie, that you sort of that Fabinho mentioned this, because Fabinho was outstanding against Arsenal. Fabinho was outstanding for 35 minutes against Crystal Palace. But then Klopp mentioned to me that, like, I asked him, like, well, what happened? Like, why did you just drop off? And he said he wasn't really quite sure. And they did try to tweak it a little bit in the second half. But I thought, in a way, maybe midfield felt slightly short in the second half. But it was a very leggy performance for Liverpool in the second half. And also Vieira mentioned that, physically they felt that they could get on top of them. But I think it's also a very strange situation, because I think for the first 38 minutes and 44 seconds, it's probably Liverpool's most controlled, dominant performance of the season. Mm. It was astonishing. I was looking at it and I was thinking, well, the only way they can do this is basically if they perhaps pass the Palace, which is exactly what happened. But the transformation was remarkable, I thought, because that one misplaced pass from Matip to Olise, and suddenly from being completely trampled on and squashed, Palace find a way into the game, and it's almost like there is a little bit of confidence, and they chase those lost goals. They at least say anticipates where those passes might end up. Also, I thought at halftime, Vieira made a good change because they went to, I think, to a 4-4-2. And Mateta mentioned to me after the game that he felt basically a little bit lonely in the first half. And second half, Eduard was closer to him, so there was like they were together attacking. Olise went wide all over Robertson. And I thought that was a very good way of them sort of isolating that space. And Olise, I mean, it's the first time I've seen him live. Oh my God, he's so good. He's very skillful and very productive as well. Like, sort of understands what's happening in front of him. Absolutely superb. And yeah, Liverpool kind of shrunk back a little bit. And in the end, it was a bit of a hanging-on performance. Alisson was quite nice after the game, because as we were walking off, I think Natalie were there as well. A lot of the people in the crowd asking for selfies with Alisson. They certainly won't be asking Jota for any selfies after this particular game, but I'm sure we'll get onto it. But yeah, but I think overall for Liverpool, they could not have gone through the spell of games any better, to be honest. And I think you could see the relief, you could see the delight from Klopp and from all the players afterwards, no matter how critical they might have been. Because again, Klopp says, you know, yeah, this period gets thrown at me every time. But also at the same time, I think in this difficult tricky patch with your two leaders gone, players have stepped up, and I think particularly Diogo Jota.
Well, you mentioned Crystal Palace's gathering momentum, roared on by the crowd at Selhurst Park, and it really did look like they might be able to snatch an equaliser as the game went on, until, Daniel, that controversial penalty decision. You're our kind of in-house scourge of the referees, so let's unload here on this particular decision, or
well,
not.
Yeah, I'm the one that tries to, well, not necessarily defend them, but just try and put this crisis into some wider context. But,
right.
I mean, there is also a narrower context that this was a rotten decision.
David Priest says it wasn't. David Priest says, I don't understand why everyone can't see that Jota was running into Gaeta because he'd anticipated the ball being on the other side of him, so that he'd switched direction to basically follow the course of the ball.
I didn't see. I saw this game on a rerun in the evening, and I'd obviously seen that because at Leicester, and I'd obviously seen the reaction on social media. And true to form, it wasn't quite as mad and outrageous as I had assumed it would be from seeing that reaction. I do think it was a poor decision. I think it's just another result of, if you slow everything down so much, it begins to create a reality that wasn't there in full speed. And the problem with that is that it makes things look weird. And VAR, you know.
I'm not sure that this one was about the pace, though. There's one angle in particular which clearly shows Jota touch the ball and then change direction and run straight into Gaeta, which, whatever his intention, for me means that this shouldn't be a penalty. And having all those angles available, this should be exactly the scenario which VAR should be able to get it right. But you know what? Yeah, life's too short.
My problem with it is, why is VAR interfering? Because for me, it wasn't a clear and obvious mistake at the first place.
Mm. Agreed. And yeah, I mean, the reality is that promise of VAR only removing the howlers, as we were told, is a nonsense. Because if you tell someone you've got a system that is going to be objective, then people will demand it is used to fix every error, and it isn't objective because it's run by people, and people aren't always objective.
Daniel, one of the issues about the kind of gathering refereeing storm is a lack of top-flight referees, a lack of qualified and experienced referees. How many referees are tied up by VAR every weekend?
They are still Premier League officials, so it's the same
pool
of referees.
But how many referees are taken out of the available pool for matches by the fact they have to go to Stockley Park and mess up and delay games using VAR?
I think their argument would be none, because they are from that same pool, that if you're not doing one, you're doing another. Now, you could argue that it would be better having them refereeing in the Championship if they're not refereeing a Premier League game, but they would argue none. That's a very thin end of the wedge, I think, in terms of our lack of referees. The bigger issue is, as I say, people seem to think there's this magic cupboard of this Narnia cupboard where referees are being kept waiting to come out who are all high class. Like, if you think that, go and watch EFL football. It isn't that way. They're not just there waiting, and it's only going to get worse. And people are only going to get more angry.
Can I just mention one last thing on the Jota penalty? I think what makes it, of course, look a lot less like a penalty is Jota's movement. But I think the way Gaeta is coming out, I think he's going to take him out anyway. So it's almost that movement isn't necessary unless he's anticipating what David Priest is talking about. But I think there is an error for Gaeta here as well, because he isn't getting the ball.
Okay, fair enough, Sasha. Also this weekend, Brighton at Leicester. We've left it a little bit late for this one, but they'd want it that way, wouldn't they, Brighton? That's how they roll. Yet another late goal, yet another strike in the last 10 minutes of a match. This time it was Danny Welbs. After 82 minutes, Patson Daka had opened the scoring for the home side. Daniel, you were actually there at the King Power for this match.
Yes, I was.
All right.
Brendan Rodgers had a slightly tricky weekend in the content from his pre-match press conference that was embargoed until Sunday morning. He was talking about Leicester's ambition and expectations, and the insinuation, whether he meant it or not, was that seasons like last season might be our peak. It might never get that good again. And that hasn't been interpreted particularly favourably by Leicester supporters, who are concerned that Rodgers is maybe doing it as a kind of means of self-preservation after the events of Wednesday night. And the one thing in the context of Wednesday night, the one thing Leicester needed to avoid if they went 1-0 up was trying to defend and sit out a lead and dropping deeper and deeper towards their own goal. And that's exactly what they did. There was 3 minutes just as we went into stoppage time on Sunday. Obviously, it was 1-1 at that point, and Brighton were attacking. And the away end just started chanting, "We're going to score in a minute." And all the home end, you could kind of, they were like, "Yeah, you probably are," because we're just sat so deep towards our own goal. Poor Kagalas Yuntu is just hashing clearances out of the box and hoping they go somewhere. And Leicester can't do that. They're not good enough to do that. They're so much better when they try and play on the front foot. You had poor James Maddison playing 25 yards from his own goal for the last 20 minutes. And yeah, they need to sort that out. It hasn't been a huge theme across their season, but given what had happened on Wednesday and given what Rodgers had said before the game, it was the one thing they didn't want to happen.
All right. Credit to Brighton, though, and Graham Potter's assistant's assistant, Bjorn Hamburg, who, I don't know when at what stage did he hear that he had to basically front up and beat a manager for a day? That must have been absolutely nerve-wracking for him.
Yeah, it was. I only found out that Potter and Billy Reid weren't going to be there when I got to the ground. So it must have been a fairly late decision. Brighton weren't very good. They couldn't pass the ball in the first half, but to make the same point again, they understood with half an hour to go that they were only 1-0 down, and they sent on Tarek Lamptey, who was brilliant when he came on. They sent on Danny Welbeck, who was brilliant when he came on. Welbeck scores the goal, and Leandro Trossard had a chance later on that Schmeichel saved that really should have gone in. And then, you know, Leicester fans booed at full-time anyway, but they would have been mutiny if they'd have conceded that, I think.
Crikey, Brighton up in ninth place, 4 points ahead of Leicester, who have their goal difference to thank for the fact that they are still in the top half. A long way off top four races and that kind of thing. There you go. Daniel, your next game is going to be a little bit further afield in Cameroon, am I right?
Yes, I fly out on down to Heathrow on Wednesday and fly out first thing Thursday morning to Douala. So, yes, I think my first quarter... So I'm hopefully going to go to two or three quarterfinals and then the two semis in the final and come back on, depending on whether we're allowed to fly out of Morocco at that point, either on the 7th or the 10th.
All right, let me just check the schedule. What have you got in mind for the quarterfinals?
Yeah, so the best quarterfinal to go to is going to be the Cameroon quarterfinal. Cameroon playing Comoros today, who will be playing, we hear, with an outfield player in goal because of COVID cases.
So you're confident of Cameroon going through in that one?
So I'm confident of Cameroon going through at odds of 1 to 100 or whatever they've been reduced to. Yes, and then after Nigeria's kind of limp exit yesterday, I'm probably going to concentrate on the bottom half of the draw, which means either Ivory Coast and Egypt against probably Morocco in a quarter final in Yaounde, which should be great.
Oof, yeah. Nigeria, who went out on Sunday to Tunisia, and Tunisia are now going to be facing in the quarterfinals Burkina Faso, who knocked out Gabon on penalties. Great celebrations by the Burkina Faso goalkeeper. The decisive spot kick, Hervé Koffi, who executed 5 backflips.
Very AFCON, seeing a goalkeeper doing backflips and the kind of all the fans running around the athletics attract to their supporters. It's super. Burkina Faso have kind of been the recent great overachievers in AFCON. They reached the final in 2013 and the semis in 2017, which, you know, it's quite a big country by population, but not necessarily in terms of football heritage. So, yes.
This afternoon, probably by the time you hear this, Guinea will have played Gambia. But this evening, you might be in time for that Cameroon-Comoros game. Comoros, who've been possibly the story of this AFCON tournament, coming up for the rest of the week. Anything in particular you would flag up as being matches to look out for? You mentioned Ivory Coast against Egypt on Wednesday. What about Senegal against Cape Verde on Tuesday?
Yeah, I feel that one might be slightly one-sided. Senegal have been the kind of stunk out the tournament at the moment. I think they've scored one goal in the group stage and topped the group. So they need to fire, but they will be heavy favourites to beat Cabo Verde. And yeah, the Ivory Coast-Egypt game on Wednesday is going to be brilliant. And then Gambia is the really interesting story because they think they can beat Guinea today, and that will probably set them up against for a quarterfinal against the host Cameroon, who are now into basically joint favourites for the competition after Nigeria went out. So this is the best part of AFCON when it really starts getting going and it's kind of made big major nation, and Ivory Coast Egypt is an absolute bonus for a last 16 game.
Brilliant. All right, well, listen, have a great trip, Daniel. We'll hopefully be speaking to you while you're out there, getting your thoughts on things. Thursday, we'll get another in-depth report on the latest events in Cameroon from Maher Mazahi, who's out there covering things for The Athletic. But that pretty much wraps it up for today's show. Sasha?
Just going to mention a winner for this weekend. Steven Gerrard went to Goodison Park and came away with a victory. And I quite enjoyed his three moments. He was coming on to the pitch at the start of the game with Gary McAllister, giggling about something, maybe McAllister's free kick in 2001. At halftime, just after, obviously, Villa went ahead, he was walking off, really pointedly looking at Park End, who were presumably giving him pelters and just sort of smirking to himself. And then after the final whistle, he was walking off, looking at Park End, and this time he stung his tongue out and shouted something. So I think he had a lovely time.
Brilliant.
Just quickly, James, while we're recording there, having said all that about Comoros having to play an outfield player in goal, it sounds like their goalkeeper, Ali Ahamada, has tested negative on Monday morning. So
wow.
He will play. They have 13 players, including him, available for selection.
All right. Well, that game is at 7 o'clock UK time. If you hear this in before that kicks off, or even while it's still underway, could well be worth tuning in for. Very nice. Natalie, anything you want to add before we wrap it up, or is that quite enough?
No. Well, I'll be travelling, but only in 10 days. I'm going to the Club World Cup, so I might come back with news from Chelsea. Yeah.
Okay, brilliant. Excellent stuff. Thank you very much for being with us today on Totally. You as well, listener and producer Charlie. We're back with a variety of podcasts throughout the week and then Totally on Thursday. So do join us for that. For now, from all of us here, it's goodbye.
You've been listening to the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Listen ad-free on the Athletic app and discover bonus content by following the Athletic UK Audio Plus on Apple Podcasts. Find out the very latest subscription offers at theathletic.com/totally. The Totally Football Show is an Athletic Media Company production and sponsored by Paddy Power.
The Athletic.